there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schnack. This is episode number 291. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a great show we have for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Elizabeth Holford is the executive director of Equality Ohio, an organization that advocates and educates to achieve fair treatment and equal opportunity for everybody living here in Ohio, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. Elizabeth started her career as a trial attorney with the Ohio State Legal Services Association. She then worked for well over a decade in academics with Virginia Tech as a tenured associate professor, director of the Office of Equal Opportunity and Affirmative Action, and director of two separate campuses. She then immersed herself in extensive work in international organizational consulting in both the nonprofit and for-profit sectors before joining Equality Ohio. Elizabeth served on the Leadership Council for the Gay Games 9, located right here in Ohio, and she is the board chair of Why Marriage Matters Ohio. She is back here with us for her 2014 Board of Directors mandated performance appraisal. Elizabeth, welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
Oh, I'm scared now. We're doing a performance appraisal. That's going to make me cry. I can already tell. I get the Kleenex out so I can get ready to dab away the tears.
I never would have pegged you for someone who cried during her performance appraisal.
Oh my gosh. See? This is the kind of revealing show that you have. And it'll be real tears, not that fakey thing. No.
I expect nothing less. We have so much to talk about. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
We have to start. I have a whole list of questions and great topics for us to talk about, but I feel I would be remiss and would be remiss if we didn't start by talking about Lila Alcorn. And for folks who somehow don't know that this is an Ohio story as well as a national story, as well as our entire story, tell everyone about Lila Alcorn.
Well, I think I'm going to boil it down a little bit.
Please.
And I think that the reality is that whenever someone is unaccepted for who they actually are, we can expect the worst.
Yeah.
And Lila committed suicide, took her own life, and really was struggling with family and others around trans issues. And I think that what we saw was this sort of spiral into a national story, and I just think it's tremendously sad.
Yeah.
And sort of horrific. And I will say the fact that this comes out of Ohio in a state where we have no protections legally around any of these issues, and where we rank among the lowest in terms of, we're one of three states where when you do transition, you can't change your birth certificate. So I think we have so much work to do. But the real story is not about all the work around it, but really the fact that we've lost yet another trans person in Ohio.
Yeah.
It's unacceptable.
And I don't want to operationalize this with regard to, I don't want to depersonalize it, but I do kind of want to pull back the curtain a little bit just for you and your role. I would imagine that you had all sorts of other things planned for the day that you heard this news, and that changed things.
Well, yes, that's an understatement.
Yeah, I bet.
It's true, and I was not in Ohio on that day, and it really changed pretty much everything, certainly for me and for our organization. But in the same breath, depersonalizing at all, what I am always brought back to is not only how much it changed for her family, but also for the trans community here in Ohio. Just the realization that things can feel so insurmountable and so unable to live with the reality of the way things are in Ohio is, I don't have another word, unacceptable is that's me being kind and
right.
Not using words that I can't use on the radio.
Right.
So although it did turn a lot of things around, certainly in terms of our activities and what we were literally as an organization doing and what I was doing, I think the focus has to be really on her and on the family.
All right. Well, we're going to come back around to that later because we, of course, are going to touch on what our listeners can do to get more involved and to make a difference. But let's do, if we can, a little bit of a year in review. You actually haven't been on since the end of 2013, so we had all of 2014. What stands out for you, Elizabeth Holford, Executive Director of Equality Ohio, as the victories, the advances in Ohio in 2014?
Well, I think there are two. We ran two statewide public education campaigns, one on marriage equality and one on non-discrimination. And I would say the level of awareness on both, certainly at the political level, but frankly on a day-to-day Ohioan's daily lives level, is amazing. We went from at the point when we started the marriage campaign, there was literally polling showed 43% of Ohioans registered voters in favor of marriage equality, and we topped over 50% just a few, actually about 3 or 4 months ago. And some people are like, "Oh, well, that's not a big deal." Oh, yes, it is.
It's a big deal.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It matters. And then, how does that figure into all the things that are going on with the Supreme Court? It does matter. I mean, one of the things that we're trying to show is that Ohio is ready, that the country is ready for marriage equality. And one of the ways you do that is with a public education campaign.
Yeah.
So I'm really proud of that campaign. It sounds funny because it's just not a word I use that much. But the work that we did across the state was pretty amazing in this last year. And I'm just happy with our national partners, the Human Rights Campaign Foundation, as well as ACLU of Ohio, Freedom to Marry, and ourselves. I feel like the campaign that we put forward and rounded out in Ohio was pretty amazing.
Nice.
Ohio's a big state, a lot of people, and we had a long way to go. On non-discrimination, I don't want to say sort of the same thing, but I'll say our public education campaign lifted up so many people. We live in a state where quite a few people, 8 out of 10 Ohioans, registered voters, before we started, thought that we already had these protections and that was already illegal. And then once folks learn that it isn't, they are absolutely have come around to the belief that there should be non-discrimination protections in the law in Ohio. So doing that work, reaching out around the state, particularly all the way through, really through the whole year, lifting up communities of faith. We had over 100 faith leaders and over 300 people of faith directly write to their legislators. We had, on non-discrimination in general, over 8,000 letters to legislators and to the governor. And that's not just people just kind of going, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm signing off on this." It's actually, you know, sitting down and working through and writing letters
nice.
To their legislators. So it's a different day. I would say also the work that's been done right there in Cleveland around municipal ordinances and inclusiveness. I think we're going to continue to see ordinances lifted up there, and particularly on trans inclusiveness.
Yeah.
You know, we've done the groundwork, but I will say, and that is an amazing thing, and that is the story of 2014 and 2015 is about victories.
Nice. Oh, I'm all for victories. By the way, I kind of didn't think through that part of public education is having to convince people, rightly so, based on the facts, that we don't have protections that we don't have.
It's sort of it's odd because, and particularly when you are either work in the field or you're aware of it, it just you think, "Oh, we all, you know, everybody knows this." But I cannot tell you how, I mean, literally shocked people are.
Yeah.
And literally a little bit of an in breath, right, of amazement around this couldn't be possible. And it's like, well, yes, it is. In fact, I had one when I first came on board back in 2013. I had a person in the media literally reach across the table and put it, and someone from our community put his, you know, sort of pat my hand and say, "Oh, Elizabeth, we have laws here." I was like, "Whoa.
Silly, silly Elizabeth." Yes.
I know. So there you go.
Oh, that's fun, because you kind of want to say to that person, "As much as I would enjoy living in the world that's happening in your head, not so much in the reality place."
Exactly.
All right.
And the way that really spins out is it affects us all. I mean, anytime, certainly affects the LGBT community, but anytime we say it's okay to treat people differently or as less than, then what spins out from that are certainly not healthy behaviors, and the sort of end result and the really horrific result is what happened with Leanne.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when we spoke at the end of 2013, I had just moved to Ohio from Vermont, and I was cracking jokes with you about that, you know, now I'm living in Ohio and not Vermont, and I was okay with the jokes mostly because Ohio stood with the majority of states that did not support marriage equality. Now here we are, and Ohio is in this dwindling minority, and it doesn't feel so funny anymore, Elizabeth, as much as it's kind of horrifying and a little bit embarrassing. It's just, I remember when I actually went back and listened, so I acutely remembered when we were cracking jokes about it, but now we're kind of hanging out with Mississippi and Arkansas, with all due respect to our brothers and sisters in those states, but it doesn't feel the same now that we are suddenly in this minority.
I would say, I'm gonna give a little bit of a laugh there, but I'm gonna say I don't think there was a whole lot of respect for Arkansas and Alabama there that you were doing.
I tried.
But that's all right.
I tried.
That was a nice try. And why we do that, I don't know, but we all do it. I have to agree with you. I have a level, in fact, with both some legislators and with some attorneys in our movement at the national level. I have been sort of teased about, it's sort of like, oh, Elizabeth, you're so impatient. You know, I love your impatience. I'm like, this is not just impatience. This is outrage.
Right.
I'm outraged that we haven't been able to lift this up. And in the same breath, if there's a little bit of encouragement, it would be around the fact that we have not been counted out yet by the Supreme Court. So I think that on Friday we will hear one way or the other. And don't ask me to call that, because calling anything in the Supreme Court is mere speculation.
Right.
I think that we have laid such great groundwork across the state, particularly in the last year, and we will continue to do so. And whatever the Supreme Court does, we are ready to follow through with whatever needs be. So we will get it done in Ohio. On other issues, it kind of an interesting thing in terms of what other states are doing. We really are in kind of a crowd of states where non-discrimination has not yet passed. And one of the things that we share with most of those states is Republican majorities. And what is interesting about the work that we did last year, and I think heartening, is the level of legislators who have gained a deeper understanding about our community and then also the importance of non-discrimination. And so you can expect us in this year to be lifting that issue up in ways that can be heard in this legislature and in ways that can get us to move it forward.
And by the way, we would like to pause right here and apologize to our listeners in Mississippi and Arkansas for any offense that either Elizabeth or I caused. It was mostly her, though, I think. I'm not sure.
Oh, I think it was all you.
All right, that's not the point. That's not the point. Well, you know, I was reading, I was on Facebook maybe a week or two ago, and John Becker, who's the editor-in-chief of the Bellerico Project, which is one of those compendium LGBT news sites, was posting about a cross-country road trip that he was taking from D.C. to Wisconsin someplace, I think something like that. And he had a post where, and I'm not quoting directly from it, where he commented about how he and the folks in his car made sure to gas up before they got into Ohio so that while they were driving through Ohio, they were not spending $1 in the state that didn't support marriage equality, which, you know, and everyone's like, oh, that's such a great idea. But for those of us living here, that just didn't sit well with me. It felt a little bit off. I think there was also a statement that he had made about, you know, you just have to rush through Ohio. It doesn't feel like that if you live here, though.
Well, it doesn't feel like that if you live here, depending on where you live in
right.
Ohio. And that is sort of the upshot of the issue. You can be in Cincinnati, Columbus, or Cleveland and feel pretty darn comfortable, as well as in some surrounding areas. But when you get outside those concentric circles, I don't want to say it's understandable what they were saying, because that just breaks my heart.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
And yet, in the same breath, until we have marriage equality here, and until we have non-discrimination laws that cover all of us, you know, not just municipal laws, then we still have work to do. So
yeah.
I am not sure that the, you know, gassing up and not participating in our economy is is the best way to go about it.
Agreed.
But I will say we do need to lift up the reality that we still have work to do in Ohio.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your work. I would imagine that there are skills that any executive director of a statewide LGBT organization uses from state to state, but I would also speculate that there are some skills that are crafted and used to work more specifically and effectively in the state where their organization is located. Talk to me about what's different about doing your work in Ohio. What are the special skills that are particularly effective here that may not be as effective in Montana or Texas or California? What's specific about doing this work in Ohio?
I think this would be true in those states as well, but being aware of our populace and really how we work through things in Ohio.
Yeah.
Ohio is not really homogeneous in terms of many things, and you know, we look that way from the outside. It's sort of like when people say, "Oh, you're a purple state," and I'm like, "Well, no, we're not.
Right.
We're very much a red state, and yet in the same breath, we're very regional." So the approach, and we are really do pay attention to the values are the same, but how we approach things and how we approach people in each different area of the state is really to meet people right where they are and not assume anything. So meeting people right where they are, talking about the issues right where people are, and also talking about the issues in I mean, we are a statewide organization, but I'm well aware that the effect of certain issues is stronger and more strongly felt in Northeast or Northwest Ohio than it might be in Southeast Ohio and Southwest Ohio or Central Ohio and vice versa. And so it's sort of having not only that understanding, but then really talking with people locally to find out how things affect them and certainly their the people in the legislature and their representatives, but literally how it affects their daily lives in their communities.
Yeah.
And I think that is probably true in other states, and yet I will say we are one of the most, it's almost like the city states of Italy or something.
Right.
It's not quite that intense, but there is both a competition, and then there really is, there's a different character to every different part of the state. And then the other thing that we do as an organization is, and that I literally personally do, is I spend a lot of time around the state. So I'm not sitting in Columbus trying to figure out what people are saying in Cleveland or in Cincinnati or in Toledo. I actually go there and participate and listen.
Now, one of the places that you did not just mention, but the Advocate, according to some formula that they came up with, is one of the queerest cities, not just one of, they named it the number one queerest city in 2015 America, Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that interesting? And I do go to Dayton. I went to law school at the University of Dayton, so I have some pretty deep roots there, so I'm not sure why I didn't mention it. Sorry, Dayton.
Okay. But who knew? Dayton, one of the queerest cities, if not, according to the Advocate, the queerest city in America 2015.
And I don't know. I don't know what's up with that, but what's great about that is, in my mind, it's yet another city that is getting recognized in Ohio as a place to live if you're in the community, which is great.
Amazing, amazing.
You know, I mean, people really do talk about Cleveland and Columbus and Cincinnati, so to have another one on the list is great.
Some people call those the three C's. I learned that through you.
Oh, my gosh. I am only here to help you. Grow.
Haven't been to either of the other two C's, but I hear that they're out there, and I would love to check them out. It's good times.
Yes, there's actually, if you could venture, you know, outside of that little bubble you're in up there, you would find that there's more to Ohio than meets the
eye. I'm just trying to get to the east side of Cleveland. Are we really saying I need to get to these other cities? It's crazy. It's a crazy world out there. Speaking of, how about those gay games?
How about those gay games?
That was a thing.
I have to tell you what a lift up, and I guess that's kind of, you know, creepy way to say it, but I just felt so lifted up by the gay games, and I think everybody that attended them did, and even people that didn't, but the whole just sort of hanging out in Cleveland during that time was probably just one of the most amazing things. I could not have imagined it being as wonderful as it was, and in retrospect, I don't think it could have gone better.
No.
which is, I mean, that's saying a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, about a major event in any city, you're always, you know, you're always picking at it and kind of going, well, you know, wait a minute, wait a minute. And just all around, the city came out, as
yeah, they
it were,
did.
Right?
So on the other side of the spectrum, well, maybe not. See, this is what happens, is that I posit these things as polar opposites, and they're not necessarily. But in a year, we have the Republican National Convention coming here to Cleveland. Do we organize around that? We're not there yet, right? We're not ready yet to talk about that, or are there already conversations happening about how we talk about that?
Well, I think there's, you know, what's interesting is, let's just talk the politics of it. I think the Republicans did a pretty darn smart thing, because Ohio is so important,
right,
in terms of electoral college votes, and she or he who wins wins Ohio wins usually the whole gamut. So recognizing that Ohio is a game changer, I think also, frankly, positioning themselves in Cleveland, which is considered a little bit more of a Democratic stronghold than Republican, I think it's both fascinating and phenomenally smart. I think around issues, there are already folks in our national partners are forming up some issues around the Republican platform and really trying to make changes from within.
Yeah.
So I think that we're going to see, it's not too early for us to be talking about it. The planning is already underway, and I would say that we will see some very judicious and, I would think, some very smart activism around the Republican National Convention meeting.
Nice.
But
nice.
I think we should embrace it and be just totally excited about it, too.
All right. I'm excited. And I hear that all of the gay establishments, their attendance increases exponentially during Republican National Convention. So I'm kind of excited about that. Speaking of, by the way, totally not on my list, but I'm going to go a little off track here. I would hope this didn't necessarily come across your radar, because you're focused on some more lofty, important things. But we had one of our very few LGBT establishments closed here in Cleveland last week, and it sparked quite the social media firestorm conversation and the subject of my next Huffington Post piece about whether or not we still need gay bars.
I think, did Bounce close?
Bounce closed. Yeah. Now, apparently it's going to reopen.
I had heard, and I was sort of surprised.
Yeah.
Actually.
In a state lacking in protections, and I do see a correlation there, and that's my whole piece that I'm writing about, is that it does feel different. I lived for 6 years in Vermont. Vermont does not have one gay bar in the entire state of Vermont, and I will pause here to say I do not think gay bars should be the only places that gay people get together. We're quite a diverse community. That said, having these designated spots, to me, I feel that even more acutely when I'm in a state that is lacking in protections, where I do, at the end of the day, want to gather, know that I can gather around other people who are lacking the same protections. Thoughts?
Well, you just said it all. How am I supposed to respond to that? Huh?
No, well, some people have really disagreed with me. I'm quite fascinated by this whole argument of we are living in this post-gay bar, post-gay establishment world where we don't necessarily need that here in Ohio, that every place is welcoming, when in fact, as you said earlier, there might be little pockets here and there, but it's quite a big state.
It's quite a big state, and I don't think every place is welcoming.
Right.
And so I think until that is achieved, that it's, you know, what makes a gay bar a gay bar? I mean, when you incorporate, do you say, and we're, you know, we're a gay bar? Generally, no.
Right.
Right? So when somebody goes into business and forms up, it's not necessarily that it's a gay bar, but it is one where our community is comfortable. And so to me, that's whether it's less about designating it as a gay bar per se and more about places that we feel comfortable. And until there is further recognition, until there's a law, because that doesn't really solve anything. It's until there is widespread recognition of an inclusion of our community, then sure, I think there will be gay bars, and I think designated as such is not, it's not something to judge one way or the other. It's more, you know, embrace the opportunity to have a place to hang out with your community.
Nice. Listeners, again, we're here with Elizabeth Holfer, the Executive Director of Equality Ohio. Big event this week for Equality Ohio. Tell us about the Allies for Equality.
Well, first of all, we had an Allies event, our holiday party in Cleveland.
I know you did.
It was December 18th. We're pushing my memory here because I'm sitting here without my computer open. And our Columbus event, we are recognizing two people who have been very supportive, literally around the state, but here in Columbus, of our community, our allies Tom Katzenmeier and Kimber Perfect, and I am totally excited for the event. I think it's probably going to be one of our biggest events ever.
Awesome.
That's right. I just said ever.
I'm going to quote you on that. There was no R. We didn't hear it.
There was no R.
Well, this brings us to the crux, and look, this is the question we always want to get to, because, great, everyone should be more informed, and as we talked about educational campaigns, everyone is not informed, so everyone being more informed is a good thing. But for those of us who have a good working knowledge, we've just sat for the past 30 minutes, we have listened to Elizabeth Holford tell us what's going on in the state, and now we are sitting here thinking, but what can I do? What can people do, Elizabeth? How can they get involved with Equality Ohio? How can they get their feet on the ground and get their voices heard?
Well, one of the things that we do, aside from parties and having an allies event, and aside from things like that, which certainly you can become involved by participating in those and coming to events, but I think the crux in terms of involvement, and I'm going to break it way, way down for a minute, but the crux in terms of involvement is learning enough and feeling comfortable enough to talk to others about our community's issues. So I was going to say our issues, but I don't want to say Equality Ohio's issues, but our community's issues. When 8 out of 10 people in Ohio don't know that there is no, you know, they think there's a discrimination law protecting us, we have a problem.
Right.
And the problem is, that, you know, I mean, the good part is, oh, so people accept us and just think it's there. But the problem is that it's not there, that you can still be fired for being gay or somebody thinking that you're gay. You can still, I mean, the 80% of bullying in Ohio happens because either a student actually is gay or somebody thinks they're gay.
Perceived, yeah.
So that whole idea of educating and sort of, I don't want to say arming yourself because it's not exactly battle, but really is having those in-depth conversations where people can explore, and also having those conversations in a way that isn't confrontive.
Right.
Nobody likes to be confronted, and yet, so it's not like, oh, you're so stupid for not knowing this, but really more about this is how this affects me, this is how this affects my life, and being able to talk to people, it's probably the number one way to be involved. How to learn how to do that and be a part of that is to talk with our organizers. We are not just myself, but we actually have organizers all over the state. We have a person that does faith organizing. We have a racial and social justice organizer right there in Northeast Ohio. We have a Northeast Ohio coordinator, Elena Jokum, and we also have a field organizer, lead organizer there that is doing great things, Nicole Thomas.
Love her. We have to pause right here. Had Nicole in my class last semester. She came and spoke to my students. Love her.
I love her. I love her more.
All right, I'll give you. I'll give that one to you.
Gosh, you're just so competitive. But I would say, you know, go ahead and avail yourself of, we will sit right down with you, we'll talk to you about it, and, you know, there's different ways for different people to participate, but I am a firm believer, and I always make sure that I practice it myself to literally sit down and talk to people and explain, you know, those moments when somebody asks me what I do, and it would, I'll be honest, it would just be easier to go, yeah, I work in advocacy, blah, 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 right? And to not go into it, but I lift it up every time. And not only tell people about what I do, but why it's important to the state, but also to me individually. And it is that part, that tying it to letting people know you and tying our issues to specific examples in your life, that changes people's hearts.
It really does. It really does. I love it. Well, our final question, and this is always my favorite question to ask people like you, and I will ask it to you every time you're on the show. I will give you the floor, Elizabeth Holford, to sing the praises of your staff and volunteers.
I can't even. There are not enough words. I am, I think, the luckiest executive director, certainly in the state of Ohio, but I'm going to go a little bit farther.
Do it.
I'm going to jump it out there and say I have around me, I think, the smartest, most capable, and fun, and engaged equality organizational staff in the country. And I don't know about outside the country, so I'm just going to round it out and say I know how lucky I am every single day. You know, the minute I mentioned Nicole Thomas, and you're like, love her.
Love her.
I can say absolutely any of my staff's names and people immediately. jump in and go, oh my gosh, you know, I met her or him at, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I, of course, I have to go, oh, wait a minute. No. It's just, I'm a fortunate woman. I am a fortunate woman because deep hard work, and the folks that I work with, they do it every day, and they lift me up a lot. They keep me on the ball.
Such great stuff. It's such great stuff. Look, the work that you guys do at Equality Ohio, and I love that you do have a diverse portfolio. You know, there are any number of folks who boil down our issues to one issue, and certainly, yes, we are lacking in marriage equality here in Ohio, and we're hoping that that victory is on the horizon. But as you articulated all throughout this interview and on all the materials you guys put out there and in every conversation you have, we're a diverse community with a lot of issues on the table. There are a lot of voices that are not currently being heard that needs to be raised up. And I think what you and your staff and your volunteers do such an amazing job doing is engaging the citizenry. It's not just through press releases. You guys are actually out there talking to people, telling our stories and saying, look, we're all trying to get to the same place. And it really is just, it's inspiring to see the work that you guys all do at Equality Ohio.
Well, thank you. And to sort of circle back to the beginning of this, let's get our stories out there before it's too late.
Indeed. And I should say, not to be remiss, on behalf of the Equality Ohio Board of Directors, renewed for another year. Well done, Elizabeth.
I believe that is the performance review. And that sounded like a laugh, but those were really tears.
It was dicey there for a second. I mean, there were a couple points where I'm like, oh, she's not going to get renewed. She just had that knock on Arkansas, and she left off the letter R on ever, and it was touch and go.
It was touch and go.
It was
that whole Dayton thing that you just didn't think I even knew where it was, but I do. I connected it up.
Elizabeth, we are looking forward to not just victories, though victories are amazing and let's shoot for victories, but just looking forward to more conversation, more stories being told, and more people feeling like their voices are being heard in 2015. You guys just keep doing what you guys do.
Well, thank you, and you do the same because you help us lift it up.
Everybody stroll on over to equalityohio.org to learn more and, of course, to get involved. Elizabeth, our thanks.
Thank you.
Forget your troubles.
Happy days.
Come on, get happy.
I hear again the strains.
All your cares
above are clear.
Again. Shout hallelujah.
So let's sing a song.
Come on, get happy.
Cheer again.
Get ready.
Happy days I hear.
Happy
days
are here
again.
We're heading across the river. Soon your cares will all be gone.
There'll be no more from now on. From now on.
Forget the time.
Folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's show to talk about the latest LGBT news happening out there in the world. Let's get to it. In Colorado, dozens of protesters gathered to express outrage this week at a Colorado pastor who refused to preside at a gay woman's funeral over this past weekend, reportedly for what he described to the mourning family as her, quote, alternative lifestyle. According to media reports, Pastor Ray Chavez put a stop to 33-year-old Vanessa Collier's funeral at New Hope Ministries outside Denver on Saturday when he refused to allow a video that showed photos of Collier kissing and proposing to her fiancé. Chavez reportedly told the family that New Hope's policy was that he would perform the service only if it omitted any suggestion or indication that Collier was gay. This minister told this grieving family that the church's policy was that he would perform the service to commemorate this woman, to send her on to the next world, to do whatever it is that these folks wanted for comfort, as they just lost their daughter, their sister, their fiancé. He said the church's policy was that he would perform the service only if it omitted any suggestion or indication that Collier was gay. By the way, I would like to read that policy. I would like to read the policy that says, and this is an indication that someone is gay. Jose Silva, a friend of Collier's, told the Associated Press that 200 of Collier's friends and family members were asked to leave the church, and the funeral was quickly moved to a nearby funeral home where the video was played. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Protesters marched this Tuesday outside the Christian church chanting "Dignity in death" and "Shame on Pastor Ray," while private security guards stood nearby on church property. Demonstrators held rainbow flags and handmade signs that read, "Standing on the side of love," and others read, "You will not find Jesus at New Hope, but you will find hypocrisy." Jose Silva, that friend of Collier, said this, quote, "They asked the family to edit the video, and that was like editing Vanessa's life. It was demeaning. I thought it was a joke." Her cousin said, quote, "It was disgusting. I couldn't believe it. It was humiliating." I just can't even wrap my mind around you're going to a funeral, much less putting ourselves in that horrid position of you've just lost your daughter, you've lost your sister, you've lost your fiancé, but say you're just one of her friends and you go to the funeral and you're told, no, we need you to move to another funeral home on this day. It's almost impossible to just wrap your mind around. So keeping our eyes on that, but a horrible story. Gary Rolando, a chaplain unaffiliated with New Hope, was called in by Collier's family to conduct the memorial at a mortuary across the street. Rolando told the Associated Press that Chavez and New Hope officials canceled the original ceremony because they did not want the images of two women kissing in the church. He told 7 News that Chavez and church officials reviewed the memorial video only minutes before the service, although they had received it days before. He said he was a friend of Collier's father and that the full video was shown at the second service. The second service that they had to come up with on that day because they were kicked out of a church. It's unbelievable. Again, folks, a lot more going on out there than marriage equality. A lot more going on out there. Ellen DeGeneres took a few minutes on her show to fire back at Larry Tomczak. This video is going all kinds of viral. Larry Tomczak wrote an essay in the Christian Post last week. His thesis was, "There is an avalanche of gay programming assaulting your home." He went on to say, quote, "The indoctrination and propaganda coming from those advocating a gay lifestyle in our country, classrooms, and culture are increasing. All of us need to take note and take action to guard those we love." He cited examples including Ann B. Davis, the movie Foxcatcher, and an ad that ran during American Idol. And he listed many more ways in which Hollywood is promoting homosexuality right now, including Glee, Anderson Cooper, Grey's Anatomy, Modern Family, Empire, Scandal, and Ellen. By the way, that's like a list of what it is I do in my free time. I just want to put that out there. Glee, Anderson Cooper, Grey's Anatomy, Modern Family, Empire, Scandal, and Ellen. Yep, that's pretty much all the highlights for me. He said that Ellen celebrates her lesbianism and marriage in between appearances of guests like Taylor Swift to attract young girls. Ellen refutes him, but not before noting, quote, "If you ask me, Larry is watching a lot of gay TV." He is. He's doing all the things that I do. She then breaks it down in this video. You got to go check it out. And it's on YouTube, and you can just search for Ellen's Real Agenda. Ellen's real agenda. And the video is pretty hilarious. But also, yay for Ellen for doing this. She breaks it down. She says, quote, first of all, I'm not married with her air quotes, because he put married in air quotes. She said, I'm married, that's all. She went on to say, I don't even know what it means to celebrate my lesbianism. I mean, well, I guess I do. She then pops a party popper and she says, like that, yay, I'm gay. Her message is to, quote, be more kind and compassionate with one another. That is the message I'm sending out. I don't have an agenda. I'm not here to brainwash anyone. But listen to the sound of my voice. Attention, youth of the world. I want you to live your lives being exactly who you are. Be true to yourself. The most important thing is to be true to yourself. The second most important thing is that you wear Ellen underwear and only Ellen underwear. So there you go. You know, at the end of last semester for my This Course Is So Gay course that I taught here at Baldwin Wallace, the final paper, students just had to pick an LGBT leader and deconstruct them. Look at, are they an effective LGBT leader? Are they not an effective LGBT leader? And a couple of my students chose to write their papers about Ellen, and it was quite fascinating. One of them wrote, yeah, Ellen is such an effective leader for just putting herself out there, for normalizing the fact that she is gay, for incorporating in her life with Portia just into just what it is that she talks about on the show. Another one of my students was quite critical of Ellen and wrote that, no, Ellen is really not a great leader because she doesn't take as strong of a stand as she could. And as I was reading through that paper, I thought, yeah, that's true. I mean, Ellen is a daytime talk show host, but she also is probably our most visible LGBT person in the media. And so it's so heartening when you see Ellen doing what she does right here and just puts herself out there and says, look, I am going to step up. I am going to have a message for youth. I am going to have a message for America because so many people do watch her. And so she obviously feels that responsibility and acts accordingly. And that is so much more than nothing. It's actually quite something. So yay for Ellen. I'm all for that. Turning to educational news, albeit not the happiest educational news, Rankin County, which is in Mississippi, and I'm not just doing this story because perhaps I had a little dig on Mississippi earlier in the show, for which, again, I apologize, and I'm apologizing again. Rankin County school board members approved a change in the district's school club policy this week in an attempt, because this is what we're spending our time on, in an attempt to prevent students from creating what Superintendent Lynn Weathersby referred to as, quote, gay clubs. Gay clubs. Weathersby brought up the issue at Wednesday's school board meeting, making clear his intention to limit such organizations in Rankin County schools. He said this, quote, I talked to board attorney Freddie Harrell and several administrators about what we could legally do to limit organizations like that on campus that we don't want to endorse and don't want. You gotta love an unequivocal quote here from this superintendent saying we want to limit organizations like that on campus that we don't want to endorse and don't want. Although school board members and officials say they were not aware of any attempt to form a club in the district, so this is more proactive, Brandon High School theater teacher Janice Weaver said she was approached by a student in December who expressed a desire to create a gay-straight alliance or a student-led, student-organized club aimed at combating anti-gay discrimination and bullying in schools. The teacher said the student submitted the proposal for the club to school administrators. Currently, students at several schools in the state, including Ridgeland High School in Madison County, have created such clubs or are working to form them. The teacher, who agreed to be the sponsor for the club, emphasized that she had no knowledge whether district officials and school board members were aware of the student's proposal. Calls to Brandon High School principal Buddy Bailey were not returned. They were not returned. In the school board meeting this week, the superintendent said he spoke with the board attorney and other administrators and learned that the best strategy for limiting organizations would be to require parents to sign a consent form allowing their children to participate in the club. School board attorney Freddie Harrell echoed the superintendent, saying a gay club might violate educational standards and principles adopted by the school district, such as abstinence-only sexual education. You have got to be freaking kidding me. I actually am feeling my anger rising, which it doesn't. I'm going to pause right here and say, you guys, you got to find your issues out there. You got to find those issues that really get you fired up. And it's okay for you to acknowledge that not all the LGBT issues do that. Marriage equality doesn't do that for me, even as I am thrilled that it gets people riled up all around me because other people are fighting for it. Issues like this, where a superintendent and the school board's attorney are spending their time trying to figure out how to limit clubs, how to limit free expression, how to limit students' abilities to get together and combat discrimination and bullying in their schools. It's infuriating. It's infuriating. And this might not be your issue, and that's okay, because you got me. I'm infuriated for you. But it should make you really angry, because these are youth issues. These are youth issues. Newly appointed board member Ira Singleton, by the way, we're at all males now for this story of the People Post, asked Harrell what would happen if parents did consent to their children participating in such a club. The attorney responded that at that time it would be up to the school's principal to decide whether the club meets school requirements. The board then approved the new policy. When questioned after the meeting, both Harrell and Weathersby emphasized the change in policy requiring parental consent applies to all student clubs. So now they made it across the board. And then now the superintendent is saying this, quote, "This is not directed to any particular club, but to organizations in general." Unbelievable. Unbelievable. After initial reports of the school board adopting the policy change surfaced, the Human Rights Campaign and the American Civil Liberties Union of Mississippi voiced their concerns, each noting that federal law prohibits any school that receives federal funds to ban students from conducting a meeting in a limited open forum on the basis of religious, political, or philosophical speech. A limited open forum is defined as a time when a school, quote, grants an offering or opportunity for one or more non-curriculum related student groups to meet on school premises during the non-instructional time. It is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Human Rights Campaign Mississippi Director Rob Hill said in a statement that the policy, quote, sends a harmful message to LGBT students in Rankin County that they are not welcomed within their classrooms, at school functions, or on the bus. The board's actions tell LGBT students that they should be ashamed of who they are and that their lives are valued less than their peers. We demand the superintendent and the board reverse its decision to publicly humiliate, degrade, and embarrass young LGBT people. I just can't believe, and yeah, obviously also because I work in education, so I feel this one maybe more acutely, that I know the issues that are on the table now for superintendents, for teachers, for school boards, and that this superintendent, this school board, this lawyer, that this is how they are spending their time. Yeah, this is why you get a bad rap for your county and why I'm probably unfairly associating you with the rest of your state. This is so backwards. So backwards, and that you are sticking to this and spending your time this way is embarrassing to the rest of us who work in education. And that's that. Infuriating. Moving on, a little bit of an update. Although the Learning Channel, TLC, is defending their special, My Husband's Not Gay, as a compelling story, critics have again continued to blast it as irresponsible. But don't worry about it, folks, even though that you have those petitions out there. In the ratings, the show was one big dud this past weekend. My Husband's Not Gay drew just 1 million viewers and ranked number 69 among all cable offerings. Its lead-in, Sister Wives, had nearly 1.4 million viewers, so My Husband's Not Gay lost 24% of the audience. That would suggest you won't see a sequel to the show about Mormon men who are attracted to men but are married to women. GLAAD President and CEOs Sarah Kate Ellis dismissed the show as irresponsible. It also, according to the ratings, was insignificant. Over on broadcast television, just for some comparison, the Golden Globes brought in 19.3 million viewers for NBC, and 60 Minutes had 17.7 million viewers for CBS. So yeah, that paltry 1 million viewers, which it's still upsetting that 1 million people, this is how they spent their time, that's pretty much nothing, so hopefully this will go away. In other ratings news, now this is a show perhaps I have watched once or twice, Vanderpump Rules. I don't expect that everyone would know this show, and I know a lot of you out there are not television watchers, and that's okay. It's more about, wow, this is the kind of thing that's happening in our culture. Jax, who is one of the characters on this quote-unquote reality show, Vanderpump Rules, there was this whole storyline that happened this week where they brought in someone from his past. Now, Jax is a notorious womanizer, notorious sex addict womanizer, pretty much lies about everything and sleeps with any woman that moves. And then they brought in this guy from his past to basically suggest that they may have hooked up before. So they had these gay rumors swirling after a man named John Walters was introduced to viewers. Jax's co-star on the show, Tom. He told his girlfriend on the show that this friend was an old modeling friend and that there were all these rumors about the two of them. Well, now Jax is stepping up and all his friends are stepping up that Bravo, the network on which this show airs, Vanderpump Rules, is doing this all for ratings. One friend said, quote, the network set that up. They want things to look a certain way. And Jax is saying, no, I'm absolutely not gay. I'm absolutely not gay, even though viewers are definitely coming to this conclusion. They had this poll out there that asked viewers, do you think that Jax hooked up with this guy? And 96% of viewers voted yes, which Jax then quickly addressed on Twitter. He said, quote, well, if giving your boy a kiss is gay, then they are right. I don't give an expletive what people say. So this is all about ratings, and the fact that we are still doing these kinds of things to drive up ratings, like that's titillating. Ooh, Jax the womanizer might have hooked up with another guy. It's kind of gross feeling, and even more gross feeling that I kind of watch the show. People will do anything for ratings. There you go. Can we go back to education? I need to get away from TV for a second. Let's get back to education. In Charlotte, North Carolina, a Charlotte Catholic school teacher says he was fired because he's gay. Parents and students say Lonnie Billard was a popular teacher at Charlotte Catholic for more than 15 years. Billard said, quote, the kids, sorry, it gives me goosebumps. You know, the kids are so amazing. He taught English and ran the theater department, was even named Teacher of the Year until deciding to scale back and work as a long-term substitute at the school a few years ago. He then got a call. He said, quote, I got a call telling me I would not be allowed to teach anymore. Lonnie is gay. He and his partner Rich have been together for 13 years. Lonnie said this, quote, as it was explained to me that because I had posted on Facebook to my friends that my longtime partner Rich and I were going to get married this spring, apparently there were a couple of teachers that were unhappy with that. David Haynes, the spokesman for the Charlotte Roman Catholic Church Diocese, the organization that oversees Charlotte Catholic School, says Billard was fired because he went against the teachings of the Catholic Church. This spokesman said this, quote, well, the Catholic Church opposes same-sex unions. Marriage can only be between one man and one woman. He's not being picked on because he's gay. He lost his job as a substitute teacher because he broke a promise because he chose to oppose church teaching, something he promised he would not do. The 68-year-old teacher says most people at the school knew he and Rich were a gay couple. Rich often comes to school events. He said this, quote, the fact that I am in a long-term committed relationship with a wonderful man is apparently abhorrent, but if I were in the closet, that would be okay. That's my understanding of the church's position. The spokesperson then said this, quote, it just goes back and forth. It's amazing. Quote, the doctrine of Catholic Church that's in question here has to do with same-sex marriage. And the spokesman insists that Billard wasn't technically fired, pointing out that as a substitute teacher, he is not a full-time employee. I love that distinction. Billard concluded this article by saying, quote, it is a ridiculous thing that a person that loves someone different from the norm, if you will, should lose the opportunity to give the gifts that I have and to lose their livelihood because they dared to love. Man alive, that we're at the point where we are taking qualified and amazing teachers and telling them, I'm sorry, you've made a choice here. You really should have stayed in the closet, and then, you know, we could use your gifts, but I'm sorry, you are not in the closet, so we cannot use your gifts. Very sad, some of the things that are happening in education in some different parts of the country. A little bit of happy news, and then we got to check out of here. A federal judge this week overturned South Dakota's ban on marriage equality, thus pushing Ohio even into a smaller minority. But yes, this judge overturned South Dakota's ban on marriage equality, writing in her decision that the plaintiffs, quote, have a fundamental right to marry. The ruling was stayed pending an appeal from state officials, which, if pursued, would send the case to the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. So there's that. In Supreme Court news, the U.S. Supreme Court this week declined to act on any of the four federal marriage equality cases stemming from the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, leaving cases out of Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, and Tennessee in limbo until this Friday, when they are going to review them. The court also denied a request to review a case challenging Louisiana's ban, deciding not to weigh in until the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has a chance to render its judgment. The justices would have to make a decision by month's end if any of the 6 court cases are to be resolved by the end of the court's term in June. So there's that on the marriage equality front. That's on the marriage equality front. Turning quickly to Egypt, a court in Cairo this week acquitted 26 men on charges of debauchery stemming from alleged sexual activities at a public bathhouse in Egypt's capital city. Activists familiar with the situation say the acquittal, which comes over a month after the men were arrested, marks the first time. This is the first time. It's a total reversal of us talking about Egypt last week. It marks the first time an Egyptian court has ever cleared individuals accused of homosexuality. The case garnered media attention in recent weeks after there was an alleged sexual assault of these men during their incarceration. So, really tiny baby steps in Egypt. Let's not get too excited. We're just clearing men that never should have been arrested. We're certainly not moving towards any type of equality, but a baby step. And finally, not leaving you on a happy note, a regulatory change approved by Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev late last year appears to disqualify the country's transgender community from obtaining driver's licenses. The decree classifies transsexualism, pedophilia, and exhibitionism as mental disorders. So, sorry, if you were in Russia, you should probably leave because it's not good for LGBT people there. Actually, I'm throwing in one more story because, again, this is how people spend their time. Alderman in Starksville, Mississippi, again, it's a Mississippi story, this week repealed a slate of LGBT-friendly policies that had been touted as groundbreaking when they were passed last year. Mayor Parker Wiseman indicated that he intends to veto the decision, but the Board of Aldermen would likely have enough votes to override the veto. Again, this goes back to that idea where it's one thing if you're saying we don't want equality here in our place that doesn't currently have equality. It is an altogether different thing when your community has taken the steps to approve equality, to make lives better for your neighbors, for your LGBT neighbors, and still people step up and say, wait a second, no, no, we know that you were given equality. We now want to take it away. It's one feeling when you never have it. It's a whole different one when you have it, and then it is taken away. And that's how we're spending our time in that part of Mississippi. I'm not saying the whole state, but certainly that part of Mississippi. That's it. No more Mississippi bashing for us on this week's episode. Our thanks, of course, to Elizabeth Holford, the Executive Director of Equality Ohio. Amazing work coming out of everything that they are doing there. So get involved. Get involved in your own state. Do what you can do to use your voice with your specific talents in the way that you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, folks, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Putting up shutters to say.